Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What did Dave Bautista say? Look at that belly. It's like a garbage bag full of buttermilk.
Welcome back to another episode of Highly Conflicted. This week, it's about money on the campaign trail. Elon Musk looms large over the Trump campaign, offering $100 to people who sign his petition if they're registered voters in Pennsylvania. After funding America PAC, the group supporting Donald Trump's ground game efforts across the battleground states, with $75 million of his own money, and he is the only donor. Plus, a new report by Democrats on the House Oversight Committee, finding in a new report that Trump overcharged the Secret Service by 300% to stay at his hotels. And this week we're back with Katie Fang, host of The Katie Fang Show on MSNBC. Welcome back, Katie.
It's like my second home, Hugo, the Highly Conflicted podcast.
I'm glad because I know you love to talk
but
about nothing
more. But are you
going to
charge me? Are you going to overcharge me for being here, Hugo, like Donald Trump did? Are you going to upcharge by 300% for me to come and hang out at the podcast? I just want to know. Or are you going to pay me like Elon Musk pays people to sign a petition to register voters? Just curious.
If I had $75 million, I would be buying myself a yacht and retiring. Sorry, Katie, I won't be funneling it to your LLC.
That's too bad.
You're welcome on the yacht anytime, though. I don't know these days. Does $75 million even buy you enough of a yacht? It's not clear. But it is Trump a ground game. And it is, well, we'll see whether or not it's effective. We will see after the election whether it's effective. But our reporting on Elon Musk's ground game doing it on behalf of Trump is they have roughly 400 people plus in each of these battleground states. And Elon's effectively thrown a lot of money at it. And I was thinking that all of this really, to me, two things stand out. One is that if Trump wins and it's because of Elon Musk's effort, this is going to give Elon an extraordinary amount of influence over Trump, because Trump would effectively be indebted to him, right? And just to explain to our listeners why this is such a big deal, the fact that he's outsourced the ground game just quickly is by not having to pay for the ground game through the campaign, Trump is effectively saving all the campaign money for television advertising. And the reason why that's important is because television advertising, if you're coming from a political campaign, you get a discount. You get a big discount on primetime and major media market. And so he's always wanted to earmark that for TV ads, and he's wanted other people to pay for the ground game. But what do we think about the influence point, at least?
Well, I thought it was clear, Hugo, that Elon wants a position in his cabinet. I mean, isn't that the whole reason why Elon's doing this? I mean, I don't think that's a secret. And if it is, it's the worst kept secret, one. And two, I mean, I travel a lot. Like right now, I'm, you know, in a hotel room and not home. And I haven't been seeing ads by Donald Trump. Have you? I mean, maybe I like subconsciously change the channel when they come on or I'm unaware of it, but I haven't seen TV ads. So I'm not quite sure what Donald Trump is using that money for that he's ostensibly saving because Elon Musk is padding his ground game.
Well, I think certainly you're not living in Pennsylvania. I think if you're living in Pennsylvania, you would be bombarded with political advertising. You know, you're in New York right now. You could be in Florida. And I guess Florida is not exactly a battleground state. So, but even if we cut him a pass on that, it is certainly true, though, that Vice President Harris has outraised Trump dramatically this cycle. The New York Times reported that she's hit $1 billion in fundraising, which Trump obviously has not. So I wonder if there is a case to be made where he's also trying to save this cash for the last, you know, 2 weeks or so of the campaign, which is where we are about to be.
Or is he saving the cash because it could be utilized for legal fees when he loses in 18 days and he alleges, with no evidence as usual, voter fraud or election integrity challenges, and he wants to be able to save his money to go to court on those legal challenges?
Well, I think that's a really good point as well. And if you remember back in 2020, part of the beef with Rudy Giuliani was Rudy thought he was going to be paid $1 million to do all of the voter fraud claims in court, and ultimately he got paid, we believe, nothing or very close to nothing. So that is an actual point that Trump could be thinking about. And you know, we have not reported this, to be clear, but it does make sense that he would do that, especially because people in Trump world do talk about how if Trump loses the election, it is his belief that it is because election integrity has failed him, that the RNC's election integrity team would have failed him. And if he is not able to overturn that result after the fact, it's because his lawyers didn't try hard enough or weren't effective enough. And that's quite a chilling proposition, actually.
Well, and if you think about it, too, the RNC has been using its money not for the ground games, right, but for building up, quote unquote, election integrity teams, right? They've been kind of creating a foundation at the RNC for that. And so if that's the case, then yes, it's a welcome financial fiscal relief for Donald Trump if Elon Musk is helping him by being able to give him the funds to be able to launch, albeit I think too late in the game, a ground game in a lot of battleground states, because as we know, they have not had the footprint. They being the Republicans haven't had the proper footprint yet. Although it does sound like they are flooding the zone right now, or attempting to flood the zone in those key states. All of that being said, though, Elon Musk buying a position in the administration, it's nothing really new for any administration, right? To the extent that I think other administrations, including Democrats, have maybe awarded or rewarded key donors with plum positions. I don't think that's what turns people's noses up so much so that it's Elon Musk. I think Elon Musk is the lightning rod for people's disgust because of the way that he runs his platform and his support of Donald Trump and his participation actively in, you know, pushing and peddling conspiracy theories that are harmful and outright lies. And I think that's the reason why, you know, people would really have a problem if Elon Musk ended up getting a cabinet position or some type of position in the administration.
I think that's fair. But Elon also has a number of, well, would have a number of conflicts of issues, right? He obviously runs SpaceX and he is a government contractor. And as we have seen with Trump in his first term, a lot of these billionaires who run their own companies don't really like relinquishing control of their companies. And so I'm kind of trying to think forward a little bit. If Elon does end up in a second Trump administration, the colossal potential conflicts of interest that could exist here. There could be the fact that he's a government contractor, the fact that SpaceX effectively runs the space program for the United States, also supplies Starlinks to NATO allies, and increasingly is being used by the government domestically and also by Trump. You know, you go to Trump rallies these days, invariably there's 1, 2, 3 Starlinks giving Wi-Fi for Trump VIPs. And so I wonder if, you know, it begs the question, if Elon wants to, he could potentially shut down Starlinks that get sent out to Ukraine if Trump wanted the Ukraine conflict to end, for instance.
Well,
right?
Wait, and what I'm going to say to you is not going to be a shock to you or anybody who's tuning in to listen, which is, if, and a big capital if that is, there's a second Trump administration, he'll bend all the rules to accommodate his cronies, right? And so it wouldn't be shocking to see the permission of somebody who has an obvious conflict of interest to be able to retain an ownership interest. Remember the whole first administration, I put everything in a blind trust, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Donald Trump clearly you know, still kept a very strong chokehold on what was happening with his finances and with his business entities, one. And two, I mean, I think it's the perfect segue into this latest news from the House Oversight, from the House Dems on Oversight, about the emoluments clause violations that are coming from that first Trump administration for the overcharging of Secret Service and other officials and others that ended up staying at Trump properties, because it just goes to show that Trump is just in it to make money. So if it's going to be profitable for him, he won't turn a blind eye to allow somebody like Elon Musk to be able to make money off of his back.
Yeah, and I just want to read from part of this report, because it is particularly damning if you've not actually read it. You know, House Democrats write, you know, the world's greatest get-rich-quick scheme was the method that Trump employed at the Trump Hotel in D.C., citing guest logs between September 2017 and August 2018. So this is even the first part, really, of the administration. Mm-hmm. And the hotel was charging as much as 300% or more above the authorized government per diem for Secret Service hotel rooms. And it added, quote, not only did former President Trump's D.C. hotel routinely charge the Secret Service more than the government rate, it frequently charged the Secret Service more than it did other patrons, including members of a foreign royal family and a Chinese business interest. Eric Trump has said previously, by the way, that the Trump organization lets Secret Service agents stay at our properties for free. But the report basically says that's a bunch of nonsense, and the agency was charged far in excess of approved government per diem rates, and even many times the rates charged to hundreds of other patrons.
So it's usurious, number one. But number two, who derives the financial benefit from it? Trump and his family, his progeny, whatever. I mean, we all knew it was happening in real time. We saw it happening. And despite people like Eric Trump, per your example, denying that it was going on, it's going on. And so I struggle to see if it moves the needle in any capacity for an undecided voter, for example. It's clearly not going to turn a Republican who's intending on voting for Trump. So with this news dropping 18 days from Election Day, is it going to sway an undecided voter that we now have official confirmation that Trump and the family grift to be able to make money? I mean, none of that is new news. I don't want to be jaded, though. So I look to... I think his name was Ramiro Gonzalez. I need to check his name because I do not want to do wrong by him. So I'm going to check that. But he was that undecided voter in the town hall for Univision. Right. And I mean, he asked better questions than I think members of the media do. Let me be very clear. And his, myself included, by the way, he was very articulate. And his question to Donald Trump about January 6th and the holy unsatisfactory response for Donald Trump made sense, right? In fact, there's a Rolling Stone headline right now that says Univision town hall participants unimpressed with arrogant Trump. But anyway, the point is, you know, after Trump gave that response about January 6th, this undecided Latino voter said, I'm not voting for Trump. So maybe this emoluments clause news is going to sway an undecided voter.
I guess this is the question, right? It's how much of Trump's antics or conflicts of interest or other unsavory parts of his character already baked in. And with that town hall participant in particular, who was very, very eloquent and did ask, you know, a fantastic question.
And his name is Ramiro Gonzalez. And I just wanted to make sure I did right by him because he was fantastic in his questioning. But go on. Sorry.
Right. And he asked, you know, effectively, he said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to win back my vote. So yeah. I see him as already not voting for Trump. And so.
Well, he was an undecided. So maybe Trump could have won him back, you know?
What, clearly right. And obviously did not. But I wonder if in the grand scheme of things, if stuff like that is baked in. I don't know.
Well, of course it is. I mean, unless you're living under a rock, you know what you're getting with Trump. So the fact that you continue to support Trump, despite the emoluments clause information coming out now from oversight, despite his answer for January 6th, despite him saying today on a podcast with Dan Bongino that the January 6th insurrectionists that are being held either pending trial or for pursuant to sentences after being duly convicted and found guilty of insurrection, basically, he compared them to the Japanese Americans that were incarcerated in internment camps during World War II. I mean, even if you know all of that and you know that's what he's all about and you're supporting him, you're lost. I mean, this may be a very harsh thing to say, Hugo, but you're a lost cause if you're voting for Donald Trump despite knowing all of that. I mean, does that make me a bad person for saying what I'm saying now? I don't know. But you're never going to listen to reason or facts or evidence. And so you're a lost cause for that.
Okay, but if you're a lost cause, then is the town hall participant a genuine undecided voter? I mean, if you are an undecided voter, you know, why are you an undecided voter at this point, right? If you need someone to earn back your vote and you're repulsed by what Trump said and did on January 6th, and you can't countenance how to vote for a candidate who multiple senior advisors have said is unfit for office, and you know, he repeated that in the question. If he knows all of that, like, how are we still in this position where voters are undecided? Like, they know all these facts. Like, is it really going to be the case that if Trump came back and said, you know what, January 6th was bad, I should have stepped in sooner, that's on me, would you take that at face value and be like, oh, well, then I'm going to forgive him for all of his other transgressions that I didn't like him for? I mean, that also seems a little disingenuous.
No, but would that have maybe won Mr. Gonzalez's vote?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if Mr.
know.
Gonzalez was like, that's all I needed to hear. All I needed to hear was Trump be repentant or be sorry for what happened on January 6th. If only he would do that, I would give him my vote. That does seem to overlook an entirety of other, you know, bad quality traits that you probably don't want in a president, like
probably
conflicts of interest. And so I was looking at that town hall and kind of wondering, yes, it was a good question, it was interesting, and maybe it was phrased because he was trying to get Trump to engage and he was trying to make it collegial in some respects.
But Hugo, the other questions were also very effective. The gentleman who asked about who's going to do all of the work that these hard working immigrants do, if you want to mass deport all of the immigrants, who's going to do the work? And of course, Trump doesn't answer that question because we all know the answer is it's not going to be some of the Americans that are here, right? And so, I think people get a little bit squirrely about polls. You know how I am. I don't like polls, right? I think that they're like wonky. But here's the thing about polls. I think in this particular race too, I think there's a large swath of people that are Trump supporters and they just don't give a shit about what they're hearing about him, right? They are what they are. They Correct. May be a one-issue Trump supporter. It may be abortion. It may be the economy, whatever.
Okay. Or the border or crime.
The border. Yeah. And those are the group of people that just don't want to listen to reason. They don't want to hear it. It's like la, la, la. They put their fingers in their ears and they're like, we either don't believe it or he's inspired some emotional reaction in them that supersedes any type of reason, right? They're terrified that, you know, illegal immigrants are coming across the border to murder their families, right? Something like that. Like, and even when you try to sit down and tell them that Kamala is not the border czar and that was never her position and that actually immigration is better now under the Harris-Biden administration. Did I just say Harris-Biden? Biden-Harris administration. They don't listen.
Trump now, yeah.
But then you have a swath of people, Hugo, on the other side that will support Kamala Harris, right? Because they believe in her and she actually has policies and plans. But I also think they're driven by a visceral dislike and hatred of Donald Trump. Whatever floats your boat, they exist. So the reason why I think there's some credibility in these polls that we're seeing these days is because it's that narrow, down the middle group of people states or whatever that are making those decisions. I wouldn't call them the undecideds, to your point, which I think you're right. They're not per se true undecideds, right? They're not weighing two really normal institutional candidates, although I do think Kamala Harris is that. That's not what we have here, right? This is not a, may I say, I mean, don't, this is not gospel. This is not like a Nikki Haley, Kamala Harris race. This is not a John Kerry, right. John McCain, Kamala Harris race. I don't know. You know, that's not what this is, right? So it is that really narrow margin of people, Hugo, that I think are going to, they're looking for something to sing to them. They're waiting for their siren song. I don't know what they're waiting for because we're 18 days away from an election. And what are we, October 18th? How many more, what's the October surprise? You got what, 13 days left to have one? What is it?
I mean, I think increasingly people in D.C. and in politics say there's no such thing as an October surprise anymore because Trump weathers so many negative headlines all the time. It's like every week he has a new surprise that he has to grapple with and see if he can distance himself from.
Yeah, but how crazy is that? But how nuts is that?
That has been so normalized, numb
and immune to it, that this is the norm, that you hear some crazy shit that he says and we're all like, oh, look, you know, crazy uncle got out of the asylum. Let's put his diapers back on and lock him back up. I mean, that's just horrific that that's the way that we're looking at things.
And just to bring this full circle then, when we're thinking about like why people support Trump with respect to the billionaire donor class, you know, with people like Elon, people like Bill Ackman, people like Nelson Peltz.
Well, those are the three guys, right, that have given the most money, right, to the PAC or whatever.
Not even. I mean, Miriam Adelson's given the most joint with Elon. But I'm just talking about like billionaires in general. People, you know, people who otherwise be Democrats were it not for things like tax policy. You know, Trump is now saying he wants SALT to come back. Even though that was one thing he negotiated out of his, you know, quote unquote historic tax deal, which Congress passed when he was in office. So there is obviously a play to that type of voter as well, but it is increasingly nebulous to me how these big money donors, people like Peltz, Musk, Bill Ackman, are willing to forego all of Trump's other bad character traits because clearly they see an upside for them financially, either because they think, you know, if he does more deregulation, if he has policies that might increase the S&P or has policies that might reduce their tax burden, they would be up for that. And it seems to me that people are increasingly being driven by single issue items and they're willing to forego everything else so long as they get that.
But I would put the intelligence and the empathy and the decency of a Mark Cuban, I would pit that against that whole group that you just mentioned that are Trump supporters any day. Because Mark Cuban, unlike those other folks, actually gets out there and explains why Trump's tariff plan is flawed. And Mark Cuban comes out and actually explains why Trump really doesn't have an economic plan. I mean, I don't see them, the Bill Ackmans and other, I mean, Bill posts on Twitter a little bit here and there, but I don't see them out there doing that, right? I almost feel like it's like a cloak and dagger, because that suggests like secrecy, because they're not secret about it. But I just kind of feel like there's a group of like, you know, kind of phantom, you know, big billionaire donors that are hanging out in the background behind like all the fog, you know, that's like, you know, doing all this stuff. I mean, they're not, we know who they are, but I don't see them really putting their necks out for him. And Mark Cuban is for Kamala Harris. So I mean, that's something to be said. It kind of reminds me of Kamala Harris sitting down for that Fox News interview with Bret Baier. I mean, I said on Twitter, when is Donald Trump sitting down for an interview on MSNBC? Roseanne Barr, who I didn't even realize that she was still around, responded to me. And I don't remember what the hell she said. But I mean, I guess my point is, when you actually test the substance of what Trump says when it comes to economic plans that would materially, allegedly materially benefit those billionaires that you speak about, he doesn't actually have a plan. He doesn't.
Other than to just maybe cut taxes, which is a fan favorite. Is that fair?
Cut taxes? I don't want to pay taxes. Do you want to pay taxes? Let me be clear, because I know, I'm sure the IRS is listening to us right now. I pay my taxes.
So, yes.
I pay them and then some. That's not the point. Nobody wants to pay taxes. But you look at these numbers. Like, I want to find this article because it was Elon Musk and like maybe two other people that were responsible for bankrolling, I don't know, the latest. I don't know what it was, Hugo, but it was like they bankrolled this. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. It was like him and like only two other people that gave the most money.
Yeah, is like, that the FEC reports this week?
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
And it was just Musk and like two other people and that was it.
Yeah. Well, and just to be clear, Elon gave $75 million of his own money to his own PAC. He didn't give it direct to Trump. But yes, in terms of money donated to the Trump movement, to the Trump effort, yes, it was Miriam Adelson, Elon Musk, and I forget who the third person was. But yeah, it was a trio.
A trio, three people only. So I guess my question for you then, what happened to the purported grassroots donors that were the small dollar donors that Donald Trump used to, I think, fleece, frankly, when he had the fine print when you would give your $5 and the next thing you know is every freaking month you're giving your $5 to Donald Trump. Like, whatever happened to them then? Because that's the thing. If you really take the time to think about it, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. He talks about wanting to be there for the little guy, right? And yet he's clearly being bankrolled by billionaires. And I'm not quite sure what happened to that grassroots game of his, because I don't really think that, I guess after a while, they just tap him out after a while. I mean, I don't know how many times people can do the small dollar donations at this rate.
And just on Elon, because I think he's such a fascinating character and the FEC
reports.
That's
not the adjective I would use, but go on.
Well, fascinating from a kind of a political standpoint, because he clearly has wider political ambitions. You know, recently he's now doing his own bus tour across America. He's flying into Pennsylvania and holding these events and these rallies. And clearly he has his own political ambitions. And I wonder if he has decided if he can take over the MAGA movement or a subsection of the Republican Party once Trump kind of exits the stage, because JD,
is he forcing him out? Do you think Elon's forcing out Donald? Is Elon the next iteration of Donald Trump?
Clearly, Elon, through his actions this week, is seeing himself as a Republican power political player. And
do other people share that sentiment?
You mean inside Trump world or generally? I mean, look, without a doubt, he is starting to throw his weight around, right? He's throwing $75 million at the ground game. He is basically running Trump's ground game. As far as I'm concerned, I basically see Trump's ground game and the America PAC field operation as one and the same thing. Like, yeah, Turning Point Action and America First Works and these other PACs are also doing some ground games, but like their presence is really small compared to what America PAC has put up in some of these battleground states, like 450 people in some of these states, like 440 people are walking this week in every day in Arizona and Nevada.
And where's the money going? That's a lot of money, $75 million. Where's it going?
So it's based on the FEC reports. It's going to a number of things, right? It's going to direct mail ads. It's going to field and canvassing operations on behalf of Trump. He's also started doing field and canvassing operations for down ballot candidates, which is why I'm starting to think if maybe Elon's wider ambitions here are not tied to just, I want to make a splash in Republican politics and be influential in a second Trump administration and have a cabinet position. I wonder if he increasingly wants to be a candidate himself, or short of that, be the puppeteer that pulls the strings. He's like the kingmaker. And to date, it has been Trump, but just by virtue of the fact that he has that big MAGA base. But, you know, as you know, in politics, money talks. And with the kind of money that Elon can and has been throwing around, I'm starting to wonder whether he sees himself as a kingmaker, maybe next cycle, the cycle afterwards.
Unless he, to your point, wants to be a candidate himself.
Unless he wants to be a candidate himself. But, you know, he is so unlikable in general that I think he would struggle to be a candidate. But I could totally see him playing a behind-the-scenes role, no?
But if listen to your theory, though, if cash is king, he wasn't always on Team Trump from the beginning. So why not throw that money behind another candidate in the Republican Party like months ago, right? Like in the primaries, right? Like why not pick somebody else to back with all that money?
That's a good question. I don't know. I suppose if you really want to play it safe and you really want to hedge, you wait until the nomination and you wait until whoever the nominee is the nominee. And then you give to that candidate because, you know, as opposed to giving to Nikki Haley or giving to Ron DeSantis in the primary and then having a good chance.
Well, because he was a Ron DeSantis guy. He was a Ron DeSantis guy at the beginning.
But he very quickly came around to Trump, right? The moment he saw DeSantis starting to flag, the moment, you know, I mean, if you cast your mind back to Pudding Fingers and all the other crap that came out against DeSantis that really sunk his primary campaign. Also, by the way, I should just add as a cautionary tale, never back down. DeSantis's primary campaign used an army of paid canvassers, like Trump is doing now, to knock on doors in Iowa, and it went basically nowhere. And he lost Iowa by double-digit percentage points to Donald Trump.
So I think maybe for another time, another podcast episode, the conversation kind of needs to be, and I think post-election, right? But I think the conversation needs to be, this is not working anymore. This canvassing ground game just doesn't work anymore. I don't think it does.
And if that's what I'm saying, like, even if he does more of that or if he doesn't do more of that, he clearly has a lot of money to throw at politics. And the next cycle around, even maybe in the next midterms, if he starts bankrolling congressional campaigns, if he starts bankrolling through super PACs, or starts bankrolling presidential campaigns, that could make him a real power player at a time where no other billionaire really is doing this apart from Miriam Adelson, who is just kind of throwing money at Trump because she likes Trump.
Yeah, but she's like old, but she's like an old school supporter.
Right, exactly.
So let's talk about Musk, though, in the context of paying people to sign a petition to register people to vote.
Well, it's a little more nuanced than that, right?
Okay, but the reason why I'm trying to simplify it is because I keep on getting asked if it's illegal. Like, can you, because you know you can't pay people to vote, right?
Right.
Like, you can't pay people to vote. That is illegal. So what he's doing is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, he's paying people now, it went from $47, I think, to $100. If you sign a petition, you get paid $100, but it's because you registered somebody to, like, you got someone to register to vote, I think is what you're getting paid for. Not because you're paying that person to register, but you're paying the person who got the person. Is that how that works?
But it's changed. So the petition is the same. The petition asks you to, and this is kind of what fits into my wider theory about he's trying to build like a become like a political power player as opposed to actually helping Trump get elected. And maybe this is just like the dry run. So the petition actually, as far as I understand it, it started off as a petition for registered voters in Pennsylvania and battleground states, I think it was Pennsylvania, to pledge their support for the First and Second Amendment, i.e. Trump voters. And if they pledged their support and they were a registered voter, or they then registered to vote, the person that referred them to the survey would get $47, and that was the original plan. Now he's upped it to, if you are a Pennsylvania registered voter and you complete this petition, which basically doesn't petition anything, this it's basically a list building exercise. It's like he's collecting emails to like blast out his Substack. Then you automatically get $100, which is basically we will pay you $100 for you to give us your information, Mr. Trump voter, for use down the line. And that's why I think he's got his own political ambitions.
Okay, so this is the actual language so that we can make sure everybody understands. The language says this. Well, this is what he said. If you're a registered Pennsylvania voter, you and whoever referred you will now get $100 for signing our petition in support of free speech and right to bear arms. Earn money for supporting something you already believe in. The petition reads the following. The First and Second Amendments guarantee freedom of speech and the right to bear arms. By signing below, I am pledging my support for the First and Second Amendments. It offers a further $47 for each subsequent registered voter someone refers to the petition. There is no limit on the number of registered voters that can be referred. I mean,
so if super popular,
you're not paying somebody to vote, so you're not violating an FAC law, whatever, but I mean, come on.
But it's harvesting data, right? And this is what makes me like think twice about Elon as I do more reporting about him and America PAC. It's basically a data harvesting exercise. It's we will just pay you for you to give us your own information and B, that of other people that are likely Trump voters or basically Republicans who will vote for a Republican cause. And, you know, collecting lists like this are very important in politics. I mean, they're very difficult and time consuming to do. And it's part of the reason why Save America didn't like to share its email distribution lists with other entities, including kind of Republican congressional committees like the NRSC and the NRCC. Save America liked to hold onto its proprietary data. And when this presidential campaign launched, it spent a long time transferring the ownership of those lists from Save America over to the Trump campaign. Effectively,
they're invaluable. Well, they're super invaluable. They are incredibly valuable. And so, and it's not just on a national level, right? Like local and state races are driven heavily by voter rolls. Like that data is really important. But the timeliness, I think, Hugo, is my question then. It's October 18th. Let's just say people sign this petition. What's the turnaround then on that, right? Like, are they now going to take that information and be able to use that to do what? To target those people with ads in advance of November?
I mean, certainly it could be used for, certainly it could be used for his ground game this cycle. I personally think he's going to build it and stash it for future use down the line to monetize it through whatever medium. I think that's what a smart guy would do. Let's see if he does that. But certainly this cycle, if he really wanted to, he could collect all of these names and emails and contact details and you know that these are like people who, if pressed to return a ballot, would vote for Trump. I mean, he could use that in tandem with his ground game operation, right? Like his ground game operation is knocking on doors, but you can also phone bank these people and you can call them up and be like, hey, you know, you were visited by a canvasser the other day. Do you still intend to vote for Donald Trump? Have you made a plan to vote for Donald Trump? And, you know, you can bolster ground games that way as well. So I can see multiple uses of this, but it just makes me very, very suspicious of Musk's own political ambitions when he's effectively doing a data harvesting list building exercise.
Well, the monetization of it's really the idea though, right? A true entrepreneur would just make money off of it. It's kind of irrelevant who the candidate ends up being.
Yeah, because he's losing money on this. These voter contacts are probably not worth $100 each, but down the line, they will give him a big chunk of data that he can then wield against or for people.
Well, remember, this is also Pennsylvania. So I haven't heard him doing this in other states. This is, from my understanding, this is just Pennsylvania for now. And the other issue, I think, too, is, you know, he's really showing his hand in that he's trying to do something off of Trump, right? He's doing it off of Trump's back is the bottom line. I mean, it's not like, well, I don't know, I think maybe Trump will run for president in 2028.
Please, no.
I'm dying. Can you imagine? I mean, it would be true Weekend at Bernie's energy, Donald Trump running for office in 2028. I can't do this again, though.
You'll be golf carting to the presidency by that point, and you won't be walking.
You'll be electric wheelchairing. What did Dave Bautista say? Look at that belly. It's like a garbage bag full of buttermilk.
All right. On that note, thank you for listening. It's been great to have you back, Katie. That's it for Highly Conflicted this week.
You've missed me.
See you next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.